Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Welcome to episode 9 of the Musical Weeb podcast. I'm your host, Rico, also known as the Musical Weeb. And sorry for the late episode, y'all. I just had a lot of stuff going on yesterday. I know it's not an excuse, but... And also, I wasn't really feeling that inspired or really feeling up to recording the episode yesterday. And I don't want to have to, you know, force myself to make an episode, because if I try to force it, then it'll probably come out pretty shitty, and I don't think y'all would like to hear that. I think y'all like to hear me when I'm, like, I'm talking, you know, kind of enthusiastically about something. It doesn't feel like I'm kind of trying to force myself to talk about something. So, yeah, again, sorry for the late episode and, you know, for the delay and stuff like that, but today, feeling a lot better, so it should be a good episode today, y'all. Starting off with what's in my rotation, starting off with gaming, I've actually been playing, Resident Evil 2, the remake, because I guess they just came out with, like, the PS5 upgrade for Resident Evil 2, and it's still as much fun as, like, when I played it for the first time. I never played the original Resident Evil 2. That was, like, back on, like the PS, PlayStation 1 era. I never played the original. Like, my first Resident Evil that I got into was Resident Evil 5. And I know that's, like, one of the worst ones, but I got into it because I saw the Resident Evil movie, which, again, it's pretty shit. But, I got into Resident Evil 5. I enjoyed it. And I liked the co-op aspect of it, too. So, after that, I became, like, a big fan of Resident Evil. I went back and played 4. Then I played 6, which wasn't that great, but yeah, it was I give it, like, a 5 out of 10. Maybe 4. I don't know. But, then played Resident Evil 7. That one was really good. I haven't played 8 yet. I'm eventually gonna play it, but haven't played Resident Evil 8 yet. Went back and played Resident Evil 1, like, that little, like, remaster or remake they did, but I feel like I would like Resident Evil 1 more if the gameplay style wasn't more of a, you know, like, Resident Evil 4, Resident Evil 2 remake, you know, that third person over the shoulder kind of play style. I'm not a big fan of, like, the tank control, like, you're moving the character like it's a damn tank, and then the camera is fixed in, like, one position of the room. That, like, I don't know, I don't like that kind of play style, me personally. So because of that, I never beat it. I mean, I know what happens, you know, and, you know, I never beat it because it got to the point where, like, I'm just not that into this kind of Resident Evil. Me personally, this ain't my kind of Resident Evil cup of tea. So, kind of a bucket list. I don't know if they'll ever do it. But it'd be cool if, you know, they remake Resident Evil 0 and 1 in that kind of Resident Evil 4, Resident Evil 5, like, kind of play style. You know, over the shoulder, like, third person shooter kind of thing. But, that's just the bucket list wish. But playing Resident Evil 2, loving it, enjoying it. I know the game, like, the back of my hand. Like, I think I made it out the police station in, like, under an hour. You know, because I played the ever-living shit out of Resident Evil 2 when it was on the PS4. But still having a lot of fun with it. Moving on to music. Actually, I've been listening to a lot of, like, kind of, like, indie pop, like, dream pop kind of stuff. I recently found this artist. Her name's a Japanese Breakfast. I know it's a weird name, y'all, but her music is really good. If you like that kind of, you know, that kind of pop sound. Yeah, Japanese Breakfast, she's really good. I found this other artist, her name's Hachi. I think, like that one movie about the dog that, you know, stayed at the train station waiting for his owner. Like, I think she named herself after that. I'm really liking Hachi. Best song to check out by her is probably Quicksand. It's just like real mellow, spacious, you know, but still kind of up tempo kind of music, like pop music. There's more like dynamic to it than like a typical pop song you would hear like on the radio, but it has enough pop sensibilities, you know, keep you like bobbing your head and like maybe even kind of singing along a little bit. And I'm really, you know, enjoying it, you know. So I've been listening to a lot of that kind of stuff lately. Haven't really listened to like a lot of, you know, hip-hop like that, because, you know, I like a bunch of different stuff, you know. I listen to all different kinds of stuff all the time. So yeah, right now I'm in my kind of pop bag right now, so listen to a lot of that. Anime. I haven't watched the new episode of Mob Psycho yet. I'm probably gonna do that after I finish this episode. Haven't seen the new episode of My Hero yet. Again, I'm gonna watch it after I finish this episode. But I read the manga for My Hero, so I already know what's coming next. Like, I'm pretty much caught up on the My Hero manga. I'm only like a couple chapters behind. It's like, I already know what's gonna happen. I'm just kind of watching it for the spectacle right now. So again, I'll probably watch that after this episode. But I literally just got done watching the new episode of Spy Family, and oh my god, it was such a good episode. There's a lot of heightened tension, you know, with the current story arc going on. There was actually some pretty good commentary on like the issues of war and like the kind of the realities of war, because I mean, I don't want to spoil too much, you know, for people out there that are watching Spy Family and they're not caught up yet. But there's a lot of good material in this episode, a lot of thought-provoking material in this episode. There's still a lot of Anya cuteness, you know. The little girl Anya, she still steals the show with, you know, her adorable self. And the animation is just, it's still top notch. I mean, it's co-produced by Studio Wit, the same people that did the original Attack on Titan seasons and other shows. And CloverWorks. I'm not really familiar with CloverWorks, but man, just hearing Studio Wit is like help like handling some of the animation, you can tell, because the animation is crisp. It is crisp. But yeah, watch that. Now moving on to the topics, starting off with gaming. Just this week, Overwatch 2 launched to the public, free to play. It's free to play. Everyone was super excited. Everyone was ready to jump back into Overwatch, since even though Blizzard said Overwatch 1 and 2 are gonna coexist, they scrapped that. It's like, no, we're just gonna support Overwatch 2. But we're making Overwatch 2 free to play so everyone can join in on the fun. But yeah, it launched and no one could even play the damn game. Ironically, no one could even play the damn game because they had server issues with the amount of traffic coming in, and two, they got hacked. They had a DDoS attack on their servers, like overloading the servers, so no one could like really play it. Like, I've seen pictures on Twitter of people like trying to play the game, and on consoles. It was mostly people trying to play on consoles that had a lot of this trouble. People that are playing on PC, they were able to play the game like on launch, but on consoles, if you tried to play, it was like, you are now in queue. 30,000 people are ahead of you. And it's like, bro, like Activision is like a $1 billion like gaming company, and like you would think they would have the money to get some really solid servers and get some decent like server protection. But nope, that ain't the case. They got hit and no one can play with it. People are starting to play on it now, but they had to implement this thing where you have to put in your phone number to get access into the game, which a lot of people are like, I don't want to do that. So a lot of people are just like outright like not even gonna bother to play the game now because that happened. And not only that, Overwatch 2, like actually getting to play it now, a lot of people found out that again, microtransactions and battle pass and loot boxes and stuff like that. But what sucks is they're hiding like some of the heroes behind it, like the heroes that you unlock. And like the whole appeal of Overwatch was it was like a tactical like hero shooter. You know, for every hero there's a hero that you can counterpick to counteract that hero. Now that some of these heroes are kind of locked behind a paywall, it's like that kind of disrupts, you know, the flow of the game, because like, oh sorry guys, I can't pick the right character to help y'all out because I don't have enough money to buy him, and I don't have enough time to go and, you know, grind to, you know, unlock this character. Because like, I think one thing these developers are neglecting is, you know, a lot of us are grown now. You know, I consider myself like kind of like the first generation of like these online gamers, because online gaming kind of really like popped off when I was younger and coming up. You know, when we had, you know, Modern Warfare 2, Black Ops, Halo 3, 2, like that was like when like multiplayer gaming, online gaming like started really popping off. And back then the developers actually kind of gave a shit about us, but now like they're more focused about, you know, money, getting, you know, trying to doing all these like, you know, these scummy kind of business actions. And they try to entice you by, look, you can either just pay us outright or you can grind for hours and hours. Which, like, the reason they put, you know, you can grind hours and hours as like a way, as like a scapegoat kind of, like, well, we're giving you a way to, you know, to earn or get these items without having to pay. But it's like, well, that's still scummy, because like, dog, we're not kids anymore. You know, we don't, you know, it's not like we have no responsibilities anymore. You know, we're all grown now. We all got like jobs. I would hope so. Most of us have jobs. You know, we gotta earn money, make a decent living, you know, provide for ourselves. You know, we don't have, you know, the amount of time that we had back in the day. You know, just spend hours on these games, you know, just grinding it out, you know. So I think it's like really shitty of like some of these developers that they're kind of doing that. Yeah, but that's the state Overwatch 2 is in right now. I mean, hopefully that this backlash is happening to Activision and Blizzard. Microsoft steps in, tells them like, hey, like fix this shit now. But we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. Some new game announcements. CD Projekt Red, the same people behind Cyberpunk 2077 and The Witcher, they announced a new slew of games. They announced a new Witcher trilogy, a new trilogy for The Witcher games, with the first, they haven't given any like solid dates or anything like that for like when this stuff is happening yet, but this is what they told their business investors, like, this is what we have coming down the pipeline, and this is kind of like our business model kind of going forward. They got three new Witcher games in the pipeline, like a new set of open world role-playing game trilogy for The Witcher. They have a Witcher mobile game in the works now, and there was one other Witcher game that is going to be handled by their new North America branch, and I think they're based in Boston, if I'm not wrong. They announced that. They also announced Cyberpunk. They did confirm that Cyberpunk is getting a sequel. You know, they haven't given up on the IP. You know, they are going to give it another game, a sequel. We don't know if it'll be a direct sequel or, you know, whatever, but we are getting another Cyberpunk game because they believe in the potential that this world has for, you know, telling these incredible stories, you know, this epic, you know, world with a lot of rich lore and stuff behind it. That just said, you know, they are working on it, but, you know, don't expect it anytime soon. And hopefully they will take what they learned from this disastrous launch of Cyberpunk 2077. They'll take what they learned and put that into use for this new Cyberpunk game that they're going to be working on. Excuse me, y'all. And they also announced that they're working on a brand new IP. Because the IPs they have, Witcher is based off a series of books written by a Polish author. Yeah, The Witcher is based off books, and, you know, they turn the books into video games. And then Cyberpunk is based off an old tabletop role playing game that they turn into a video game. And this one that they announced is a fresh new IP. You know, it's something that's made in house. You know, the world is made in-house. They're not adapting anything. They're making everything from scratch. They didn't give any details about it. They just said it's in the very early stages of conceptualizing it. It's not even, like, in development. You know, they're just conceptualizing it. But they are making, like, a brand new IP. Which I'm really interested to see. Because maybe that game will actually be their best game. Since they won't have to be, like, restricted to having to faithfully adapt something into video game format, that making a brand new IP just lets their imagination go wild, you know. Are they able to really craft it, you know, from the ground up like that? So I'm really interested to see, like, where they take that to. Moving on from that kind of good piece of news, going on to some more shitty business news. Bethesda is the company that has made games such as Skyrim, Fallout. They're also the parent company behind games like Doom, Deathloop, Dishonored. They're a pretty, you know, well renowned video game studio, but in recent years they kind of lost sight of what made them, and they kind of done some pretty questionable and shitty business practices. And the latest in this new Bethesda, I don't know, clusterfuck, I guess you can call it, Skyrim came out in 2011. It is over a decade old now. And it came out on the PS3, then they remastered it for the PS4. and then they remastered it again for the PS5. But the crazy thing is when they port these games over to these new consoles, they've still been charging like $60. It's like, why are you charging me $60? This game is like 10 years old. You just updated a little. It doesn't even look like that drastically different. Like, yeah, there's more ambient lighting, the textures look better, but the character models are still pretty much the same. You know, it's still the same game at its core. It's like nothing like really significant has changed like that. And they recently just ported over the Skyrim Anniversary Edition or whatever to Switch, and they're just charging $70 for it. Again, this is a 10-year-old game, y'all. They're charging $70 for it. Not only that, there's been reports of the game on Switch. It's not even working right. Like, it's crashing. The frame rate is trash. Like, the game's not even running properly, but they're still charging $70 for a 11-year-old game now that has, you know, performance issues. It's like, how does an 11-year-old game still have performance issues 11 years later? Like, that makes no sense. So, Bethesda, y'all need to get your shit together, because this is ridiculous. I mean, I'm still get the new Bethesda game, Starfield, because it actually looks pretty interesting. I'm gonna get that, but Bethesda, y'all need to get your shit together. Like, this is getting ridiculous at this point. Excuse me, y'all. But moving on to anime news. Some good news for My Hero fans. The My Hero manga will not, I repeat, will not be ending this year. The author behind My Hero announced some time ago that the My Hero manga will probably be ending by this year. But he recently just said, I don't think that's the case anymore. So he didn't say how much longer it has, but he did say it's not ending this year. So my prediction is it'll probably go on to March, maybe May, June at the latest. But you know, y'all can rejoice. Y'all still got some more My Hero left for the year, and a little bit more after that. So, you know, some pretty good news for My Hero. Also good news, Bleach. As I reported in previous episodes of the podcast, Bleach has been kind of been in limbo, so to speak. It's been in limbo. You know, Disney got the rights to exclusively stream Bleach, but a lot of people were like, well, where is it going to be streaming at? Because they've done this before. They got an anime with summertime rendering. They got the rights to stream it, but you can't even stream it anywhere. You know, it's not on Disney Plus. Like, it's nowhere. Well, good news, they're not gonna give Bleach the same treatment. And not only that, Bleach will be similarly cast, meaning when the episode comes out in Japan, it will come out here in the West, you know, whatever. And it will be streaming. It actually airs tomorrow on Hulu. Bleach will be exclusively streaming on Hulu, and you can watch it. Like, most anime episodes, they come like around like noontime, like here in Houston. So just, you know, for my, you know, viewers outside of Houston, you know, just do a little mental math with your time zones or whatever. You know, when it's here, when it's noon here in Houston, that's when the anime episode happens. So I believe in California, it'll air like around 10 a.m. And I believe in like the East Coast, it airs like in 2 p.m., something like that. But yeah, that's some really great news, actually. You know, I cannot wait to watch it tomorrow. You know, this has been years in the making, the 1,000-year blood war. Oof, I can't wait. Speaking of, I can't wait. Berserk, the greatest manga ever. Don't at me. Berserk is the greatest manga ever. I don't want to have this debate. You know, fuck you, One Pieces. Fuck you, My Heroes. Berserk is the best manga of all time. And Berserk, they made a website commemorating the Berserk Golden Age Memorial Edition that's coming, the remaster remix of the Golden Age arc movies coming out later. And on the website, they put up a mysterious countdown. There's a countdown on the website, and the countdown is set for December 11th. Now, we don't know what the countdown is specifically for, but me personally, I'm hoping that the countdown is for an anime announcement and like an actual anime series announcement, because I've always said if Berserk gets the right, like, the right anime adaptation for it, like, it will be like, you know, probably like top 5 animes of all time, because that's how good the source material is for Berserk. Like I said, it's the best manga ever made, and if you can only find the right studio to translate that into anime format, you know, you have a hit right there. But the attempts we've had, the movies were good. The 1997 anime was cool. The CGI looking one that came out like in 2014, 15 or whatever, that one was trash. But if we get the right anime studio to adapt Berserk in, you know, kind of its totality, like finally moving past like the Golden Age arc stuff, then, you know, it's gonna be a hit, you know. So I'm crossing my fingers and I'm hoping that's what the announcement for December 11th is for Berserk. Or the other possible thing it could be is they're gonna announce that the manga is going to be continuing, and that they've recovered enough of Kentaro Miura's work or whatever he's left behind to able to finish the manga off in his stead. But me personally, I'm hoping that it's just the anime announcement. So yeah, I can't wait for that. Moving on to music. One of my favorite bands, one of my favorite pop punk bands, is Paramore. I love Paramore. Even my mom loves Paramore. Shout out to you, mom. Yeah, I love Paramore. Riot is like one of my favorite albums. With Brand New Eyes is dope. Even like the self-titled, even though it was kind of a shift into more putting the pop and pop punk, like really pop, I still love that album a lot. Even their last one, was it the one that had Hard Times on, well, After Laughter, that's what the album was called, After Laughter. Even that one was dope, where they kind of brought in like 80s influence into it. You know, I love Paramore, and I always wanted to see Paramore live. Hopefully one of these days I get to. But I always said, like, even though I really want to see a Paramore, it will not really suck, but, you know, it's kind of bittersweet that I would never be able to hear Misery Business performed by them, which is like their biggest song, Misery Business, because Hayley Williams, the lead singer of Paramore, said about four or five years ago that they're going to be retiring the song from live performance, because a lot of like feminists on Twitter, like, kind of out of nowhere, really, kind of out of nowhere, started like jumping down their throats saying how the song is, you know, anti-feminist and it's hurting, you know, the female agenda and stuff like that. And I mean, Hayley Williams, you know, did what she thought was right, and you know, it's like, you know what, yeah, I wrote that song when I was like however old, you know. Of course, I do support women and stuff like that, so I will be retiring the song from the set list. You know, we won't be performing anymore. But just recently, they were performing, and they're playing their show, and I believe it was like near the end or like at the end, and like the crowd's cheering, whatever. And she looks at the band, she's like, "Ah, fuck it," and then they start playing Misery Business, though. Which, like, is dope, because, and I kind of use this like a springboard into, I think a lot of people are, and musicians are kind of getting tired of letting kind of outside influences influence their own art. Whereas on one hand, yes, we should hold, you know, artists somewhat accountable for their actions and stuff like that, but it's also like, we also as people, you know, also gotta be self-aware enough, you know, like, is what, like, for example, Misery Business, was that really that demeaning or, you know, really hurting feminist culture like that, as opposed to, you know, allowing some other like incel hateful speech, you know, brewing, and you know, y'all are not addressing that, but you want to address, you know, Hayley Williams' song Misery Business when it's honestly not that bad, you know. So it's like, we gotta be self-aware enough to like, even though it might not totally agree with what you think, you know, you gotta be self-aware and, you know, pick your battles, pick what is actually worth it in the end, you know. And I feel like Hayley Williams kind of came to that conclusion and was like, you know what, fuck it, you know, it's not that bad, and you know, it's my art, you know. If I want to perform it, I'm gonna perform it, which, you know, I salute, tip my hat, you know, I respect Hayley Williams for that. You know, because, and honestly, I'm kind of starting to see that a little bit more and more, not just in music, but kind of in pop culture in general, where people are starting to get a little tired of, you know, studios, companies kind of pandering to, you know, these politically correct, like establishments and these like social groups. Because, like, on one hand, yes, representation does matter, and you know, not painting certain groups in certain lights is, you know, that's not okay. You know, at the end of the day, we're all just people at the end of the day. But also at the same time, you know, this is entertainment, you know. As long as it's not spewing like real hateful speech, like, I don't really see the problem, you know. But also at the end of the day, you know, some of these groups, you know, that ain't my life, that's not my reality. But I'm talking from my reality, you know. Some of these things that some of these people are trying to champion for, it's like some of this, like, it's kind of arbitrary. Like, it's not really worth it, you know. And sometimes, in my opinion, it's more harmful than what some of these, you know, social groups are saying that these companies are doing, you know. Like, saying, you know, this group is underrepresented and now it needs to be represented in like everything. Well, it's like, well, it's all about inclusion, you know, and like normalizing whatever is, you know, your social group is. But at the same time, when you do that, you're kind of objectifying yourself, you know. You're kind of painting yourself like, I am this, I am defined by that. And when it's like, no, like, isn't the ultimate goal for normalization, you know, it should just be organic, you know. It shouldn't be kind of a spectacle, like, oh, this is in this movie, or this is in this video game, this is in that, you know. Like, no, like, at the end of the day, you're a person. You're not defined by these other things. You are you, you know. Let your personality, let your character, you know, define who you are, not what group, or, you know, what, you know, social, political, you know social construct that you identify with. Don't let that define you. Let your own personal character define you. And because I feel like that's what the issue is kind of boiling down to, and where both sides of, you know, this kind of social conflict is happening. You have the one side that's like, you know, I'm tired of seeing this in all my movies and, you know, games, whatever. I'm tired of seeing this and all my stuff. Which, to those people, it's like, dude, like, get over it. It's like, the main goal is just normalization. Like, these things do exist. You know, we can't act like they don't exist, you know. And by doing this, you know, we're kind of protecting another generation, yet not yet born yet. That, I'm not saying, you know, this kind of prejudice or whatever will never go away, but hopefully, you know, they'll be able to at least live their lives without, you know, the fear of, you know, of hate or violence, you know, like, looming over them, you know, throughout their life. But to the other people, there's like, no, we need more of this and that and that and that. It's like, well, again, you're kind of painting yourself as like a token character, and, you know, when you do these kind of things, like, you know, that character should just be them, you know. If they are, you know, whatever it may be, you know, that, you know, you identify with, you know, don't let that be their defining characteristic. Just let them be them, you know. Only then will I think, you know, real acceptance, normalization will happen, you know. But that's just in my humble opinion, you know. Yeah, I respect everyone, you know. Like, I always say, who am I to judge, you know. I ain't perfect, you know. I'm really nobody, you know. So don't take what I say as gospel, you know. But, you know, that's just my humble opinion, you know. Take it as you will. But that's my little TED talk for the day. But respects to Paramore for bringing back Misery Business. Moving on. Now, speaking of opinions, Kanye West. Kanye. Whew, this boy has been making the rounds again on social media. Honestly, it came out so left field and out of nowhere, and it came so quick that even I can't wrap my brain around, you know, everything going on. But I will try my best for my viewers. So the first thing that pops into my mind is Kanye had his Yeezy season, I believe he's like on Yeezy season 9, you know, for his clothing brand, and he wore a shirt that said White Lives Matter. Now, that caused quite the kerfuffle on Twitter and Black Twitter and all that kind of stuff. And now, I'm not gonna open that can of worms, because it's not really my place to open that can of worms, but I will say that, you know, as much as I love Kanye, you know, it's getting harder and harder to kind of justify his actions. Like, that, I'm like, you know, I won't defend him, but I'll just chalk that one up to, hey, it's his opinion, you know. Do I personally agree with it? That's my own personal business, but that's his opinion, you know. You know, it is what it is. He gets that, you know. I can't tell him any other, you know, any other way. But he was going on Instagram sharing tweets from, or like text messages between him and P. Diddy, P. Diddy once, you know, pull up on him to supposedly talk this out, because, you know, Kanye West is a big artist, and he, I believe he's still, like, the richest black man in history. You know, he's in a very high position of power and influence, and P. Diddy wanted to have a sit down with him and describe to him and tell him why he thinks that, you know, this is harmful to, you know, the black community and stuff like that. But Kanye wasn't having it. You know, they're going back and forth, and Kanye is, you know, screenshotting and sharing the text messages on Instagram, like, leaking them. It was a whole thing. I'm like, whoa. Then this one, I have to condemn Kanye for. Like, there is no defending. Like, dog, you need to apologize for this. This is coming from a Kanye stan. You need to apologize for this one. He said, I'm going DEFCON 3 on all Jews. I'm like, and he said that, you could tell he said that one with his chest. He typed that one out in all caps with all Jews. I'm like, whoa, nah, buddy, nah, you gotta reel that one back and apologize, because, nah, anti-Semitism, nah, bro, nah, that ain't the move. Nah, that ain't the move. Like, you're getting into, like, hate, like, Nazi speak at that point when you start talking like that. And if there's one thing we can all, I won't say all, sadly, but hopefully most of us can condemn, is, like, Nazis and Nazism. I would hope mostly all of us would condemn that. And when you start speaking that anti-Semitism talk, you start getting into Nazi territory. And that is a big, big no-no. Like, he needs to, you know, Twitter already took down the tweet, because that's a real violation of their guidelines. Even though Twitter is, like, the wild, wild west, you know, you can say whatever the fuck you want. And motherfuckers even, like, post porn on Twitter. But there's certain things, like, if you have a big platform like that and you say stuff like that, even they're like, hey, yo, nah, that is going too far. Because when you, because the funny thing about Twitter is you could say, like, some not so nice things, maybe not so, you know, politically correct things, but if you say it in kind of a codic way, and, you know, you don't say, like, a direct slur or, like, directly call out the group or whatever, you know, you can kind of skirt your way around the community guidelines. When you do what Kanye did and just straight up, you know, just in all caps, all Jews, and start talking shit, nah, dog, that ain't gonna fly. So the tweet got taken down, and honestly, he needs to apologize, you know, apologize, or, you know, make it clear, like, hey, yo, like, what are you talking about? Because, like, you're, that's, like, bordering on Nazi territory at that point. So, Kanye, oh, I love Kanye, but I can't defend that. I can't fucking defend that. I can't even condone that. So, like, nah, dog, like, you need to retract that statement, say, I humbly apologize, you know, do something. Because, yeah, dog, nah, Kanye takes an L for that in my book. Speaking of L's, Young Thug and Gunna, they're still locked up right now. They're still facing, you know, RICO charges. They're just, you know, they're locked up right now. The trial was going to be in January of 2023, but the prosecution filed to delay the trial to March of 2023. So them boys are gonna be locked up for a little bit longer. Like, the thing about RICO is, I mean, if you're fighting RICO, you know, your chances of actually winning and getting off are, like, slim to none. Because if you have a case for RICO, that means you have, like, pretty damning evidence. And most of the time, if you have a Riku case, you know, the court systems, they're gonna make that shit worth it, because in Riku cases, you're charging like a whole group, you know, you're going through the process, like the legal processes for like 10 people plus. And in this case, they have, I believe, like 29 people that, or 27 people that they are going to be trying for this case. So they're going to make this shit worth it. And I mean, they're probably going to, you know, get locked up and probably go to jail. I'm hoping for the best for Gunna and Young Thug. I mean, I'm hoping for the best, but I mean, we also got to be realistic. I don't think, you know, seeing it how it's kind of envisioned in anime format, is really dope. So if y'all have Amazon Prime, y'all need to watch that. But they just announced that season 2 is actually coming January of 2023, which is awesome. And they also announced that they got greenlit for a season 3. Season 2, and I'm pretty sure season 3 also will be covering the Chroma Conclave arc of their campaign, which I haven't watched all of the original, you know, campaign 1 live streams from, you know, the Critical Role show, because like I said, those shows, they're like Dungeons and Dragons games, you know. Dungeons and Dragons games, they can take a while, like sessions can be like 3, 4, 5 hours sometimes. And and there's like over like 100 episodes for the first campaign, so yeah, I don't really got time for like that. But since they're doing this, you know, anime, then I'm down for that. I'm down to experience the story through that, so I don't have to go through the hundreds upon hundreds of hours of, you know, live streams that I have to watch. By here, the Chroma Conclave arc, from people who watched the original streams, that this one has a lot of character development for the Vox Machina party, a lot of different locations and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm really, really excited for that to come out. And speaking of like Dungeons & Dragons games, yesterday I actually played the Aliens tabletop role-playing game. I recently bought the starter set for the game, and I went over to my grandma's house and played with my cousins and my uncle. And of course, I was playing the Game Master. I'm the forever Game Master / DM. But I was running the game for them, and wow, one of the best experiences I've had playing, you know, those kind of games. Because for one, the game really played out like an Aliens movie. For those of you who don't know, like Aliens, you know, like the 1979 movie with the Xenomorphs and Sigourney Weaver, you know, that Aliens. The game, oh my god, it was so much fun. Wow, like it was so much fun, because there was actually kind of like an air of tension and like dread while playing the game, like there actually is watching the movie. And the cool thing about the game is that there's actually a mechanic for stress, which the more stressed your character is, like the more, like it adds more chances for you to succeed at whatever you're trying to do. But the more stressed you are, the more likely you are to also panic. And when you panic, it has, you know, differing severities of, you know, of consequences, you know, from little things like you get like a nervous twitch, you know, to full-blown things of like you go catatonic, where, you know, you just freeze up, you know, you're just like staring blankly into space, you know, you don't, like you're just like frozen, you know, like you're like in a coma type thing. And the game, oh my god, it was so much fun. It was started off with the crew of the USCS Montero, which was played by, you know, my cousins and my uncle. They're having to deliver this cargo of helium-3 gas to Sutter's world. But as you know, they come out of hyperspace and you know, they're doing their things around the ship, they're like, okay, let's call Sutter's World, and they're like, hey, we're approaching, you know, be ready for us. When they called, they get no response. They get no response, and they're like, well, like, hello, hello, no response. And then they, according to their star charts, they should be like in visible view of the planet, but there's nothing there. Come to find out that their star maps have been wrong the whole time. They're lost in deep space right now. Now, they were able to get it back on track, but when they did, they found an abandoned ship, a ghost ship, just floating in space. And they received a new directive from their company, the Weyland-Yutani Company, that they have to board the ship, direct the ship to the nearest, to Anchorhead or to the nearest Weyland-Yutani facility. They have to recover all scientific data and samples from the ship and save whatever crew, if any, they're still on there. So they get on the ship, you know, they're exploring, you know, it's dark, you know, it's cold since the power is all turned off, you know, they're looking around. And my cousin Julius, he had the motion scanner, and he would scan the object. They would get like a ping, and when they would go check it out, nothing was there. And they did it another time where there was a ping coming from the mess hall. They go check it out, and when they get there, nothing was there. But then the lights all suddenly turn on, and then the crew from this abandoned ship wake out their cryopods, and you know, they're trying to figure out what the fuck happened, and like, all right, we gotta split up, you know, get this done, you know, get out of here. So my cousin Julius and my cousin Anthony took one of the scientists, his name was Cooper, down, and this other scientist, corporate liaison named Clayton, down to the science lab to recover the samples and stuff like that. And it turns out Cooper was actually infected with some kind of like fungal like disease or whatever, and like his head burst open and something like clawed out of his head. Like, it was wild. It was like wild. Man, it was just crazy. And then my uncle Jose was actually the synthetic whose directive was to like not be exposed. If he got exposed, then you know, he had to kill everyone. And the way I played it, like, I played out like a big twist at the very end, like a movie. Like, oh my god, it was so much fun. And we actually talked about, we're actually going to start playing Dungeons and Dragons, and we're going to be playing the adventure Call of the Netherdeep, made by Critical Role. So I'll be going over there Friday to help them make the characters and stuff like that, and I will be reporting to you how the game's going, and you know, kind of getting a semi play-by-play. But yeah, that about wraps it up for episode 9 of the Musical Weed Podcast. Again, sorry for the late episode, y'all, but you know, I'm only human. But I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I will catch you on the next one. Peace.